ISIS Audiobooks presents an unabridged recording of Consider Phlebas, written by Ian M. Banks, read by Peter Kenny. The moral right of the author has been asserted.
Idolatry is worse than carnage. The Quran, chapter 2, verse 190. Gentile or Jew, O you who turn the wheel and look to windward, consider Phlebas, who was once handsome and tall as you. T.S. Eliot, The Wasteland, verse 4. Prologue. The ship didn't even have a name. It had no human crew because the factory craft which constructed it had been evacuated long ago. It had no life support or accommodation units for the same reason. It had no class number or fleet designation, because it was a mongrel made from bits and pieces of different types of warcraft. And it didn't have a name, because the factory craft had no time left for such niceties. The dockyard threw the ship together as best it could from its depleted stock of components, even though most of the weapon, power and sensory systems were either faulty, superseded or due for overhaul. The factory vessel knew that its own destruction was inevitable, but there was just a chance that its last creation might have the speed and the luck to escape. The one perfect, priceless component the factory craft did have was the vastly powerful, though still raw and untrained, mind around which it had constructed the rest of the ship. If it could get the mind to safety, the factory vessel thought it would have done well. Nevertheless, there was another reason. The real reason the dockyard mother didn't give its warship child a name. It thought there was something else it lacked. Hope. The ship left the construction bay of the factory craft with most of its fitting out still to be done. Accelerating hard, its course a four-dimensional spiral through a blizzard of stars where it knew that only danger waited, it powered into hyperspace on spent engines from an overhauled craft of one class, watched its birthplace disappear astern with battle-damaged sensors from a second, and tested outdated weapon units cannibalized from yet another. Inside its warship body, in narrow, unlit, unheated, hard vacuum spaces, constructor drones struggled to install or complete sensors, displacers, field generators, shield disruptors, laser fields, plasma chambers, warhead magazines, maneuvering units, repair systems, and the thousands of other major and minor components required to make a functional warship. Gradually, as it swept through the vast open reaches between the star systems, the vessel's internal structure changed, and it became less chaotic, more ordered, as the factory drones completed their tasks. Several tens of hours out on its first journey, while it was testing its track scanner by focusing back along the route it had taken, the ship registered a single massive annihilation explosion deep behind it, where the factory craft had been. It watched the blossoming shell of radiation expand for a while, then switched the scanner field to dead ahead and pushed yet more power through its already overloaded engines. The ship did all it could to avoid combat. It kept well away from the routes enemy craft would probably use. It treated every hint of any craft as a confirmed hostile sighting. At the same time, as it zigzagged and ducked and weaved and rose and fell, it was corkscrewing as fast as it could, as directly as it dared, down and across the strand of the galactic arm in which it had been born, heading for the edge of that great isthmus and the comparatively empty space beyond. On the far side, on the edge of the next limb, it might find safety. Just as it arrived at that first border, where the stars rose like a glittering cliff alongside the emptiness, it was caught. A fleet of hostile craft, whose course by chance came close enough to that of the fleeing ship, detected its ragged, noisy emission shell and intercepted it. The ship ran straight into their attack and was overwhelmed. Outarmed, slow, vulnerable, it knew almost instantly that it had no chance even of inflicting any damage on the opposing fleet. So it destroyed itself, detonating the stock of warheads it carried in a sudden release of energy which, for a second, in hyperspace alone, outshone the yellow dwarf star of a nearby system. Scattered in a pattern around it, an instant before the ship itself was blown into plasma, most of the thousands of exploding warheads formed an outrushing sphere of radiation through which any escape seemed impossible. In the fraction of a second the entire engagement lasted, There were, at the end, some millionths when the battle computers of the enemy fleet briefly analysed the four-dimensional maze of expanding radiation and saw that there was one bewilderingly complicated and unlikely way out of the concentric shells of erupting energies now opening like the petals of some immense flower between the star systems. It was not, however, a route the mind of a small archaic warship could plan for, create and follow. By the time it was noticed that the ship's mind had taken exactly that path through its screen of annihilation, it was too late to stop it from falling away through hyperspace towards the small, cold planet forth out from the single yellow sun of the nearby system. It was also too late to do anything about the light from the ship's exploding warheads, which had been arranged in a crude code, describing the vessel's fate and the escaped mind's status and position, and legible to anybody catching the unreal light as it sped through the galaxy. Perhaps, worst of all, and had their design permitted such a thing, those electronic brains would now have felt dismay, the planet the mind had made for through its shield of explosions was not one they could simply attack, destroy, or even land on. It was Shah's world, near the region of barren space between two galactic strands called the Sullen Gulf, and it was one of the forbidden planets of the dead.